Welcome to the program, God and Country Radio, a program that examines current political, social, economic, prophetic events in the light of biblical exposition. I'm your Bible teacher, Pastor Brad Winship. And since today is the first of the new year, as has been my usual practice, today's program is about prophecy, particularly some observations about Europe and the coming empire of the Antichrist. Let's begin with Revelation chapter 17, verse 12. The 10 horns which you saw are 10 kings who have not yet received the kingdom, but they receive authority as kings with the beast for 1 hour, or rather for a specified period of time. Revelation 17 and 18 are pauses in the chronological description of the cosmic judgments that are to come upon the world during what is called the Great Tribulation, that which Jesus spoke about in Matthew chapter 24. These two chapters describe the makeup of the empire of the Antichrist. Now, there are plenty of symbols in these chapters, but the prophecy itself explains the symbolism. It states clearly that the beast represents the empire. The 10 horns on the beast are 10 kings or nations that will arise. Now, chapter 17 begins with an image of a woman riding on a beast. She is called Babylon the Great, the mother of harlots, the abomination of the earth. Without going into too much detail here, the great harlot represents false religion, false ideology. And it finds its roots all the way back to the Tower of Babel mentioned in Genesis 11. In ancient Babel, the principles of pagan religion were founded. And false religion is described as the great harlot because in the Old Testament, religious apostasy was illustrated by and accompanied with immorality. Also, the harlot is the direct opposite of the true bride of Christ, the church. Now, this woman is riding a beast. The beast in the book of the Revelation represents the empire of the Antichrist. In the book of Daniel, chapter 7, the empires of man are described as beasts that devour and crush. This is God's point of view as described by his prophet Daniel. In Daniel chapter 2, the pagan king Nebuchadnezzar sees the four empires as a beautiful statue of man. But Daniel, the man of God, sees them for what they truly are, cruel beasts. Now, the beast is the government of the Antichrist. But the beast is also a reference to the Antichrist himself, because the king of the empire and the empire itself are often seen as one. This beast or empire comes back to life. Revelation 17:8. The beast that you saw was and is not and is about to come up out of the abyss and go to destruction. Those who dwell on the earth, whose names have not been written in the book of life from the foundation of the world, will wonder when they see the beast that he was and is not and will come. I don't believe this resurrection is a reference to the Antichrist, but to his empire. It is describing the revival of a worldwide empire, and this surprises the world. The word wonder in the text means that there will be the world adoration and fascination with this revived empire. The beast existed in the past, then ceased to be, and now returns. And this speaks of a revived Roman Empire, and I will discuss that in a moment. But first consider also Revelation chapter 13, verses 3 through 4. I saw one of his heads as if it had been slain, and his fatal wound was healed. And the whole earth was amazed and followed after the beast. They worshiped the dragon because he gave his authority to the beast. And they worshiped the beast, saying, who is like the beast? And who is able to wage war with him? So this beast will come back to life, and all the earth will be amazed. Historians and world leaders have not seen an empire like this since the days of Rome or Greece or Babylon. And the world will love this empire. They will take pride in its seeming invincibility, who is able to wage war with the beast. This is man's aspirations for globalism. Man's infatuation with human government to solve all problems. Because when God is not God, man still needs a God. And government becomes that God. But the point I want you to get from this text is that this is an empire that's revived. It's based on something from the past. And the standard interpretation of almost all evangelical theologians is that this empire is a revived Roman Empire. It comes out of the people and the region of the old Roman Empire. I was just reading some of the early church fathers, and I noticed that Irenaeus, who lived in the second century, wrote that 10 nations will come out of the Roman Empire, the empire that he was living in. And these 10 nations will make up the kingdom of the Antichrist. Irenaeus was simply following the biblical prophetic texts. Now, how is this derived? Well, back in Daniel chapter 2, Daniel sees a vision of four empires that will arise in the world after him: Babylon, Persia, Greece, and Rome. And the fourth empire, Rome, is set apart as unique. Daniel 2:40. Then there will be a fourth kingdom as strong as iron, inasmuch as iron crushes and shatters all things. So like iron that breaks in pieces, it will crush and break all these in pieces. Inasmuch as you saw the feet and the toes, partly of potter's clay and partly of iron, it will be a divided kingdom. But it will have in it the toughness of iron, inasmuch as you saw iron mixed with common clay. As the toes of the feet were partly of iron and partly of pottery, so some of the kingdom will be strong and part of it will be brittle. And in that you saw the iron mixed with common clay, they will combine with one another in the seed of men, but they will not adhere to one another, even as iron does not combine with pottery. In the days of those kings, the God of heaven will set up a kingdom which will never be destroyed. And that kingdom will not be left for another people. It will crush and put an end to all of these kingdoms, but it will itself endure forever. Now, from this text, we are told that in the days of this fourth empire, the Messiah will set up his rule. And Jesus did come in the days of the Roman Empire, but this text actually says the Messiah will set up his kingdom and destroy all other kingdoms in the days of the 10 kings that come out of that fourth empire. If we then go to Daniel chapter 7 and Daniel's vision of the fourth beast, he writes the following. The fourth beast will be a fourth kingdom on earth, which will be different from all the other kingdoms and will devour the whole earth and tread it down and crush it. As for the 10 horns, out of this kingdom, 10 kings will arise. And another will arise after them, and he will be different from the previous ones, and he will subdue three kings. He will speak out against the Most High and wear down the saints of the Highest One, and he will intend to make alterations in times and in laws, and they will be given into his hand for time, times, and half a time. So this fourth kingdom will devour the whole earth. Rome was the largest empire in the history of the world. It conquered the major civilization centers. But notice in the prophecy that out of this fourth beast, Rome, 10 kings will arise. When you think of kings, think of the nations that go along with the kings. And the question is, what 10 nations have come out of Rome? Remember Isaac Newton, the 17th century English physicist? Well, he was also a Christian and a student of prophecy. And he proposed 10 original nations or people groups that came out of Rome. the Franks, the Brits, the Germanic tribes, the Italians, the Spanish, etc. I'm British. The Winships came over from England in 1635. But somehow I have some Southern European blood. I am not a fair-skinned Celt. Lidonium, London, was a Roman colony. For all I know, I have Roman blood. The United States is a kingdom that has come out of the people of the Roman Empire. And you could also include in this Canada and many South American countries. The EU right now has 28 nations, 24 official languages, a flag with 12 stars, but only 6 major languages. Either 10 major European nations will make up the kingdom of the Antichrist, or 10 European people groups make up the kingdom of the Antichrist, or the kingdom of the Antichrist begins with 10 nations, but soon all of the nations join. For the book of the Revelation describes all the world as following the Antichrist. The United Nations is a prime candidate. It was begun by European people. But the main point is that the prophecy indicates that the empire of the Antichrist will be European. We can be sure that the kingdom of the Antichrist will not come out of Japan or China or Africa or Indonesia. In fact, the Bible makes a distinction between the kings of the East and the kingdom of the Antichrist. And the Bible, for whatever reason, takes the time to tell us these things. So we must consider this worthy to note. Well, after these 10 nations that come out of the old Roman Empire, after them another king will arise. Daniel 7:24, as for the 10 horns, out of this kingdom 10 kings will arise, and another will arise after them. This is the Antichrist, the world leader. This is the horn that possesses eyes like a man and a mouth uttering great boasts. He will speak out against the Most High and wear down the saints of the Highest One. He will intend to make alterations in times and in laws, and they will be given into his hand for time, times, and half a time. That's 3.5 years. And in the book of the Revelation, the Antichrist is described as reigning for 3.5 years, 42 months. Revelation 13:5. And the Daniel prophecy tells us that he will subdue 3 kings of the 10 kings. So we may assume that his empire begins with 3 major European-based nations. Are you getting all this? I'm rushing through all this to give you a quick review. Seasoned Christians are generally familiar with these prophecies, but they do take a little bit of time and effort to learn. The bottom line is that we should keep our eye on Europe, because out of Europe, the remnant of the old Roman Empire, the Antichrist kingdom will come. So let's talk about Europe and the crisis that's brewing. Don't be surprised if in the 21st century, a major European war breaks out, maybe even in our lifetime. Europe has never gone through a century without a war. And remember, the apocalypse begins with a war, maybe World War III. Revelation chapter 6, verse 2, someone goes forth conquering and to conquer, and peace is taken from the earth. And out of this comes the new world order of the Antichrist. But many people today would say, everything's fine in Europe. It will never go to war again. Well, that's what everyone was saying at the beginning of the 20th century. But by 1917, Europe broke out into a war unlike anything that has ever been seen in the history of mankind. When they said peace and safety, sudden destruction came upon them. 1 Thessalonians 5. Back in 1909, a British economist by the name of Norman Angell wrote a book called The Great Illusion. An angel believed that the great illusion was that the nations gained by war and conquest. When the truth is, war is costly to fight, and even the winner never gains economically. The winner has to incur the cost of occupation. And with this principle in mind, Angel predicted in 1909 that Europe would never go to war. Especially because at that time, European nations were more financially interdependent upon one another than at any other time in history. And he theorized that the more interdependent nations are, the less the chance of war. That nations are not likely to go to war with their customers and their producers. 7 years later, after he wrote that book, World War I breaks out and Europe is a bloodbath. Believe it or not, Angel won the Nobel Prize for his erroneous theories. Which is no surprise, for the committee also gave the Nobel Peace Prize to Yasser Arafat and to President Obama after his first month in office. Oh, by the way, the chairman of the Nobel Committee recently asked Obama to return the prize. Anyway, Angel had his mathematical formula, but he didn't understand human nature. Just like economists said that the subprime mortgage crisis could never take place, because they believed that people would always work in their own financial self-interest, that people will always weigh out the risks and the rewards. But guess what? We had a subprime mortgage crisis. Angel's mistake was in not realizing that the more nations are interdependent upon one another, the greater the chance of war. Because in interdependence, the behavior of one nation has a greater effect on other nations. People don't fight with their neighbors on the other side of town. They get into fights with their neighbors next door who borrow the lawnmower or whose tree falls down in their yard. Costa Rica is not going to go to war with Nigeria. Costa Rica will go to war with neighboring Panama or Nicaragua. In 1860, the American states went to war with one another because of their interdependence. The United States was not going to have a civil war with South Africa. And our involvement in the Gulf War and with Iraq was not because we didn't have anything to do with the region, but because we had oil contracts and facilities there. And we were obligated through oil deals to protect the Saudis. And so in 1917 and in 1938, European nations went to war with each other because of close economic political relationships. So now let's fast forward to the 1990s and the formation of the EU. Why do you think European leaders created the EU? After two world wars, the EU was the plan to prevent Europe from once again slaughtering 100 million of their own people. Europe has a track record of war after war. The only thing that has kept European states from going to war over the last 75 years was that Washington was in control of Western Europe and Russia was in control of Eastern Europe. These two superpowers disarm much of Europe. But Europe wants to be on its own, and so social thinkers believe that the way to prevent war is to make all of Europe interdependent. One currency, one body of lawmakers, free trade. But they're making the same mistake as Norman Angel, believing that interdependence, globalism, prevents war. The irony is that the very politicians who are trying to prevent war are throwing fuel on the fire. And the more they see strife in the EU, the more they try to solve the problem by doubling down on interdependence, globalism. But Daniel chapter 2, they will not adhere to one another, even as iron does not combine with pottery. The EU is in trouble. and it's likely that Europe will soon turn on itself. Charles de Gaulle wanted a united Europe because he believed the French would lead it. But now they're being led by Germany, their arch rival. The Germans wanted an EU so that they could dominate the markets and accomplish through business what Hitler tried to do through conquest. Germany is buying up all the businesses in Southern Europe that are worth buying up. And in recent news, Germany is very unhappy with Britain voting to leave the EU. The German finance minister said that we will not let Britain leave. We're going to make Britain pay its dues to Brussels. And smaller countries in the EU believe that they would benefit from the richer European countries. But now they're learning that a common currency hurts their ability to grow and export. They need their own cheaper currency. There's a debt crisis among these poor European states. Unemployment in Germany is 5%, but unemployment in Greece and Spain and France and Italy is 25%. The same level it was in America during the Great Depression. These countries expected prosperity from the EU, and it's not delivering. Let me just list Europe's problems. First, economic disparity between member nations, with the wealthier nations making poorer nations debtor states. Number two, internal hatred between the people. The French don't like the Germans don't like the Italians, etc. Number three, immigration problems. In looking for cheap labor, European countries have brought in Muslim workers. And they're not integrating into society, but they're forming their own enclaves. Number four, an aging population. The population in Europe is declining due to the theology and the values of secular liberalism. This creates not only a need for more workers, but also there's not enough younger people to support socialism. Something has to happen very quickly in Europe, otherwise it's gone. Number five, oppressive socialism. Businesses can't innovate or grow because of oppressive taxes and regulations. Number six, military instability. Only a few European nations have armies. France and Britain, Italy, Germany. The rest of the nations depend upon NATO. Now again, to fix all of these problems, the spirit of the age is to push for more globalism and more interdependence. I just read this week that President Obama, speaking in Athens, said that the people around the world are going to have to guard against a rise in nationalism, ethnic identity, or tribalism. Obama and other world leaders do not want individual states. They believe the answer to world peace is globalism. And if you don't get anything else from today's program, remember that the world and Europe, in going for globalism, is not going to create peace, but war. Trying to break down national identity and unifying economically and politically are the recipe for war. Take, for example, the United States' relationship with China. Our political leaders back in the 1970s opened up trade with China as a hedge against China's aggression, thinking that if we're economically linked, we're going to be friends. But over the last 50 years, the more we did business with China, the more China considered us the enemy. And China is building up massive arms with the goal of defeating the United States. Now consider this. What is the biggest economy in the world? You might think the United States or China, but it's actually Europe. Europe, with 48 countries, contains 731 million people. 2.5 times the size of the United States. And although we might imagine Europe as being passé and insignificant, it's still the world leader. As Europe goes, so goes the rest of the world. Don't underestimate the potential for Europe's role in the kingdom of the Antichrist. Daniel chapter 7, as for the 10 horns, out of this kingdom, 10 kings will arise. In 1915, no reasonable person would have predicted World War I. And even after that war, that was the war to end all wars. And no reasonable person would have predicted World War II. All that happened in the 20th century would have seemed far-fetched to a person living in the 19th century. So as we start off the 21st century, please realize that many unexpected and unbelievable events will take place in this next century. And this is why we all need to flee to Christ and to his salvation. 1 Thessalonians 5:3, the day of the Lord will come just like a thief in the night. While they say peace and safety, then destruction will come upon them suddenly, like labor pains upon a woman with child, and they will not escape. But you, brethren, are not in darkness, that the day would overtake you as a thief. You see, God's people are safe. And that's why we need to flee to Jesus as our refuge. Not fleeing to the world, or to the politicians, or to the government of men, but to God. Psalm 18:2, the Lord is my rock, and my fortress, and my deliverer. My God, my rock, in whom I take refuge. That decision to make Christ your refuge is salvation. And may he be your refuge for this coming year and for all eternity. You've been listening to God and Country Radio with Pastor Brad Winship. The radio website is godandcountryradio.org. From there, you can listen to this program again or other past programs. Also from there, you can send me an email. I would love to hear from you. That's godandcountryradio.org. Thank you for listening today. Let's close in prayer. Father in heaven, may each person listening today realize that the world is passing away. And the only deliverance can be found in the King of Kings and Lord of Lords, Jesus Christ. In his name we pray. Amen.